The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, the month of May is graduation time. A lot of students will be graduating from high school, and parents are thinking about a college education. It's no secret, college has become more expensive over the years. And one of the problems that we have today is too much student loans out there and a lot of student debt. What are ways can bring down the cost of education? We're going to talk about one of those ways today, an online degree. Joining me on the program as my special guest is Dr. Karen Pollack. She's Assistant Vice Provost for Online Undergraduate and Blended Programs. She's also an Assistant Professor of Education at Penn State. Karen, let's talk about the history of Penn State World Campus. I just want to point out for our listeners that you were rated number one for a bachelor's program by U.S. News and World Report. So let's talk about the history of this World Campus, how it began, when it began, and the success that you have had.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for inviting me to join the program. We did start at Penn State with a correspondence-based study program that had actually a more than 150-year history back when Penn State University was the Farmers High School. And so it was really evolved along with rural free delivery of mail. And we had our roots over 150 years ago in delivering correspondence study to farmers, sons and daughters who wanted to pursue their education and still be able to be at home and help with the family farm. So fast forward 18 years ago, we evolved from a primarily correspondence independent study based program to a fully online web-based collaborative campus, basically a full-service virtual campus that started with maybe five programs and 48 students in 1998. Today, we have 18,000 students and more than 100 programs available fully online.
And you say there's a history of this. You began sort of like as a correspondence for farmers. They could take correspondence courses, and then you gravitated to becoming on the internet. In terms of online cost at Penn State, because it's also brick and mortar, what are the differences in cost? Are they substantial pursuing an online degree where you're not attending class versus, let's say, you know, actually attending a college?
Right. So where the cost savings come in to play with online learning is exactly as you'd mentioned earlier. Our students are able to continue to work full-time, maintain employment. They basically pay the Pennsylvania in-state rate, whether they live in the state of Pennsylvania or outside of Pennsylvania. In addition, they do save room and board, which adds about 50% to the cost of a traditional education.
So basically, with the flexibility of taking an online course, and I know my youngest son is pursuing a medical degree, he's doing the same thing. He can continue to work. So the advantage of an online program is, I assume, it allows for a lot more flexibility versus, let's say, living on campus and attending full time.
Right, absolutely. Our students can really study at times and places that are convenient to them. They're completing weekly assignments, readings, group activities, but they are able to participate and do that within a more flexible time frame of the week, including into the evening and weekend hours, which is not typically available in a traditional residential education program.
Now, Karen, attending an online, are there webinars that the students participate or watch, let's say, a professor lecture? Explain how all this program works.
Right. I would say yes, all of the above. We have students who still, believe it or not, get textbooks. They do read books. They participate in webinars. They are exposed to group discussion through various facilitated technology tools. They do virtual presentations. They are immersed in a rich multimedia learning environment where we are able to simulate and do animations of concepts that might be difficult to understand on a chalkboard. Like one example would be understanding the concept of probability or how that works. So we have a course on statistics that actually shows students how probability works through an animation of dice rolling and how you're able to use projective modeling through statistics and probability to understand likely outcomes.
So explain some of the webinars. Now, are those live classes? Let's say I was taking a course. Would there be certain times during the day in which this webinar would be available? So like, let's say if there wanted to be some interaction, either through texting or email with the professor, explain how that would work.
Right. So the model or the mode of education is primarily what we would call asynchronous, meaning that there are captured videos, there might be lectures, but primarily students are able to log on or off or view the materials or participate to part of a threaded discussion at their convenience. Then there are other aspects that do involve more of a synchronous element where students are expected to log on at a particular time. But because we have 18,000 students from every continent throughout the world, we really try to de-emphasize or minimize the amounts of time that students have to be synchronously connected. And so, honestly, we do have students that are synchronously involved in activities. Often that happens when they come here to University Park for a graduation. They come and participate in our commencement. And then we have several programs at the graduate level where students do come and have sort of an orientation or a plenary event where they will come on campus, they will meet their faculty, work on a group project together before then they're dispersed. They go back to their homes, states, and countries and complete the remaining program elements online.
Now, Karen, Penn State has had a history of this. As you mentioned, you started out as sort of a correspondence, which naturally led to online. And you're also a brick-and-mortar school, too. What percentage of your students are online versus brick-and-mortar?
Right. That's a very good question. So our student headcount right now is about 18,000 students, unique students who participate in our online programs. At any given time, I would say approximately 10 to 15% of our students that are participating in online courses are actually residential students. They are students here at our main campus at University Park or at one of our Commonwealth campuses. So we do make spaces available in the online courses to our residential students. And I would say that increasingly, they are very attractive to a traditional age student who may not want to get up in the morning for 8 o'clock class.
As you started originally as a correspondence college, and then you've gone on to online university, where do you see the vision or the future of online college education compared to so many of our part of the education system around the country is mainly brick and mortar? So what would be the vision for online college education in the future?
Right. That is a very good question. And, you know, we've had that discussion here on our campus, our virtual campus, and we think that in a few years, people won't be talking about online learning at all. And that the conversation will really be about learning, about rich, engaging student learning experiences and learning environments that are very student-centered. And you will find increasingly, as we see now, that even the residential bricks and mortar campuses and those students are increasingly experiencing more and more online or virtual elements as part of the expected curriculum or program of study.
Well, you know, when you take a look at our technologically driven society, the things that we have today are smartphones, iPads, tablets, things of that nature. It just lends itself to this. What would you say are some of the differences of an online education versus somebody that just traditionally, you know, moves into a dorm and attends 4 years living on campus? What are the main differences, do you think, between those two educations?
We have always said, and I think it's still true today, that an online student has to be a very motivated, self-directed learner. They really need to be organizing themselves. They need to be proactive. They need to be keeping up with their assignments. There is not somebody physically standing in front of them in a classroom every day. They need to basically go to the learning environment. They need to engage. You know, they need to kind of put themselves on a schedule to keep up with the pace of this and to make sure that they're not falling behind, that they're asking questions, that they're participating in class discussions. It's kind of become a truism of online learning that really the student is never invisible. There is no such thing as sitting in the back of the class. At any given time, the instructor can see exactly who's participating, who is not participating, the quality of their participation, the level of interaction that they have with their classmates. And we find that students who tend to be a little bit more shy, a little more soft-spoken, a little bit more reluctant to speak up maybe in a large physical classroom environment, feel a little bit more confident or emboldened to speak up in the online environment. They have time to compose their thoughts. They have time to reflect a little bit on what they want to say. and there's not so much competing for limited time with the instructor.
Would you say, Karen, that one of the big motivating factors for online education is affordability? Because, I mean, like you said, room and board could be half of the cost of attending a four-year university. And one of the problems that we've had, and it's being addressed today, is even in this presidential campaign, is a lot of students may end up leaving school. They get married, and the average couple may bring anywhere from $70,000 to $100,000 of student loans into a marriage to start out with. I mean, that's a heavy debt burden to start life with.
It is. It's daunting. I do believe that's true. I think in the early days of online learning, if I think back 18 years ago when we started the World Campus, a lot of our dialogue was about convenience and flexibility. And we still talk about convenience and flexibility, but we talk now much more about access and affordability. And we talk about being more student-centered in our approach to learning, which means also meeting students where they are in terms of their academic preparation, where they are in terms of the time of day or the number of hours a day that they could commit to their studies. And so it's really a much more customized, personalized approach to learning, really in the interest of making learning and education more accessible and more affordable to all students.
And what would you say are some of the technologies used by your university that stand out as a leader in terms of online education? I mean, what makes you number one?
I would say that we really, first of all, pride ourselves on the excellent level of faculty that we have. We have highly qualified faculty who are renowned in their field. They are established experts. They are researchers. They are award-winning faculty who are primarily doctorally prepared. Second, I would say, we have a technology-rich learning environment where we really create an environment where the faculty are expected to come and to bring their unique subject matter knowledge, their expertise in their topic area. But then we supplement that with a team of learning designers, of multimedia and technology staff who really help to create a very rich, interactive learning environment. So we're looking at different tools that create a more personalized learning experience. We're looking at different dashboards for our students that are used in academic advising, that at any point in time, a student can log in and see exactly where they are in their course of study. Their academic advisor has the same view of where they are in their degree plan, what they need to complete, where they may be falling behind, or where they are really excelling. And so they're able to have very informed discussions, very personalized to each student and where they are currently academically and where they want to go. Another feature that we're really focusing on is looking at adaptive learning. And so that's increasingly using an array of rich media tools that are more about what, as I said, meeting students where they are, helping students to understand where they are strong, where they may be deficient, and to continue to present content to them in an iterative manner so students can practice doing problems, they can respond to questions, they get instant feedback and guidance on where they may have gone wrong. The software then can target them and provide more practice, more drill and practice in an area where they are weak, and then scaffold them and structure them to a point where they can get to mastery and then move on to the next topic. So adaptive learning is something that you will be hearing about, is really the wave of the future in learning.
You know, something that really strikes me, Karen, something that you mentioned earlier, somebody that's attending an online program or degree has to be self-disciplined. I mean, you have to discipline to do your homework, to do your assignments. Have you done any kind of studies in terms of the success of people that, let's say, pursue an online degree versus a traditional brick and mortar? Because as you mentioned, you know, a lot of these students that are attending online are working. So, you know, the fact that you're more disciplined and methodical in order to attend an online university, I just wonder what the outcome is in terms of results in the workforce.
Right. That's a great question. So the net result is that we prepare and produce a student who is not only academically qualified, but is in an excellent position professionally to succeed and to perform in their workplace and to be able to progress in their career ladder. So we are attracting a student who is going to come, who's going to be very self-disciplined, and who basically is going to teach learning like a job. And having taught online myself, I can tell you that most of our students, adult learners, who bring to the online classroom a rich array of professional work experiences, of serious habits, of study, end up being the top students in the class And I think it's not a leap to say then that they quickly become the stellar employees in the workplace.
Now, I know that in addition to be assistant vice provost, you're also a assistant professor of education. Can you tell me, Karen, is it different in terms of being an instructor or a professor teaching a class online versus just, say, you know, showing up at the classroom with the interaction of students? Is it different as a professor?
Yes, I think it is. And so we have faculty that really love both environments. I have taught face-to-face and I've taught online, and I love teaching in the online environment. But I think it definitely requires a comfort level with technology. I think, unlike many might suspect, it's not a lesser degree of interaction with the students. I would say the feedback that we commonly get from faculty is that they have a deeper and greater engagement with the students in the online course. And it really goes back to the analogy I gave of there being no back row in the online classroom. Everybody's there. Everybody's visible to you. Students are going to be communicating with you at all times of day and night. And so really, when we work with our faculty about how to be successful online instructors, we're talking to them about things like student engagement, you know, responding to students in a timely manner, responding to students in a very personalized manner that lets the student know, I know who you are, I know a lot about you, I know a lot about your writing style and your likes and dislikes from having corresponded with you or communicated with you in an online environment. And so for the online faculty member, it becomes a lot about learning how to set expectations, too. We don't expect faculty to work 24/7. We do expect them to be able to take a holiday or take a weekend off, but it's really learning to maybe shift their work practices and then set reasonable expectations with the students for how quickly they'll get back, you know, and, you know, within 1 or 2 days or within the same business day, but to let them know that they won't necessarily be reading all their communication over the weekend or they'll be catching it up on a Sunday night. So I think, in summary, I'd say faculty who are attracted to a more flexible work style are also more attracted to the online classroom. They could still go to a professional conference and continue to teach their online course. They don't have to find a substitute lecturer for the day.
Now, I know, Karen, that online degrees at the bachelor's level have really taken off. What about, let's say, at the master's or the doctoral level? What about that? Do you see this progression moving in that direction? Or are these advanced studies, like somebody that's going for a master's degree? I think it would be somewhat difficult, I think, for somebody that wanted to become a doctor to do it online. I don't know. I may be have a wrong perception of that.
No, you're right. We do have many master's degrees online. I'd say the most popular areas are business, technology, and health. There are some areas I would call the holy grail or sort of the yet-to-be-conquered frontier for online learning, and certainly medical education would be one. And I don't think I'll be seeing the day when a person can earn their MD through purely online study. But what I can tell you is that in some of these areas, some of the programs of study in, say, engineering or in health that would require more laboratory-type work or laboratory-type settings, you'd be amazed at now how technology can simulate and actually improve on some of those practice skills that the students would get in a physical environment. Virtually, they can be replicated. I would say that they're not the same, but in some ways, they could even be enhanced in terms of the amount of precision of a student's work, the amount of very detailed feedback they could get on their performance or how they did with a dissection or where they went wrong in working with different laboratory materials. Amazing things are being done today, and it'll look very different, I would venture to say, 5 years from now than it does today.
It's amazing, this technologically driven society that we live in, the devices that we had, I mentioned smartphones or tablets. You know, the internet has changed commerce. It's changed advertising. You have social media today, and it's really changed the retail industry. So, you know, logically, education would seem like a factor. In terms of our audience out there, let's say there's a parent out there that has a child graduating from high school next month. They're looking at possibility of considering an online college education. What are the most important factors for them to consider in making that decision?
I would say that they should look at the reputation of the college or the institution. How experienced and practiced are they in this business of online education? Is the credential that they're offering you accredited? Is it accredited through the same body as the bricks and mortar institution? And I can say at Penn State, ours is. We go through the same accreditation process. Will the diploma or the transcript that they receive at the end, will it look the same? Will it have the same weight or the same bearing as a credential that they earned on campus? And so again, at Penn State, that's one thing that we do pride ourselves, is that the education they receive, the transcript, the diploma are literally indistinguishable from one that's earned in residence. So I think those are important factors to consider. And then I would also add, what kinds of student support services do they offer to my son or daughter? Will they still get the same kind of personalized service around career counseling, around tutoring, around technology support, career placement, various aspects that really go into making the student very well-rounded and well-prepared in the world of work?
Well, listen, Karen, I really appreciate coming on the program because I really think the online college is the future, especially as education expenses have become more expensive in terms of, you know, the traditional model that was somebody went to high school, after high school, you went away to college, you lived on campus. It's becoming quite expensive, and this is certainly a lot more flexible. If our listeners would like to find out more about the different degrees and programs at Penn State, how could they do so, please?
I would tell them to go to our website. They could find us at www.worldcampus.psu.edu, and that's World Campus, all one word. If you search on the internet for the World Campus, Penn State, I guarantee, will come up on top.
Well, listen, Karen, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Some great information, and congratulations on being considered number one.
Great. Thank you so much.
You know, Jim, as I mentioned earlier on in the program, just talked to a gentleman who teaches English in various countries in the Middle East, and he is going to be starting a PhD program at a university in Prague. Virtually, he can do everything online. He only has to show up at the university twice a year, which he can do in the course of his travels. And this is interesting because the cost of college, going to college, as you and I both know, is high because you physically have to get there. Then you have to pay all the expenses for the upkeep of the campus and your courses, as well as living there, as opposed to, say, going to a local college and living at home with your folks, like all of my kids did for the first 2 years at least. And so this online issue is becoming bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and I really think so. When you take a look at many of the challenges that millennials are facing today with $70,000 to $100,000 worth of debt, you know, thinking of living at home longer, and we're seeing this, John, actually, in the new homes that are being built here, they're being built for multi-generational living, where, you know, you may be taking care of, like in your case, John, you took care of your mother the last few years of her life. And, you know, that's what's happening with my mother today, where she's living and being taken care of. And the same thing, you know, with kids coming back. And I think the traditional paradigm that existed for almost half a century, you know, junior got out of high school and went to college, out of state or in state, lived on campus, room and board. I mean, room and board could be half that cost. So I think working, number one, gives you experience. And how do you know until you try something that you're working at that you're going to like? One of the things that, you know, my kids did is they got to do apprentice programs. You know, like my middle son, who eventually came to work in this business, he at one time was thinking that he was going to be a vet. He got a job working at a vet during the summers, got bit a number of times and said, don't think I'm going to do that. Then he was in a research program at Pfizer in their R&D program. So, you know, he went to college and got biochemistry. So working, I think that adds a lot of value, experience. And then also you take a look at the alternatives. Going away to school, living on campus, and graduating with $70,000 to $100,000 worth of debt versus being debt-free. You know, I don't know about you, John. I worked my way through college. And so when I graduated, I didn't have any debt. And fortunately, I got scholarships to graduate school. So, you know, I didn't have any student loan debt. So when my wife and I got married, I got a good paying job out of graduate school. We were able to actually buy a house because we didn't have any student loan debts. And I was making a good income. She had good income. And so we were able to start our family without a lot of debt and live the American dream. And I think this paradigm shift, I think we're going to see more and more as we go forward, because I think the old paradigm is not going to work anymore. Well, that concludes this week's program, and do look into this. We're going to cover more things. Last week, we covered funding in terms of trying to apply for financial aid. Now, online university, we're going to cover more of these topics. I really want to explore the topic, is an A school education really worth the extra $100,000, $150,000 versus a B school? I guess maybe depending on your profession, I want to explore that. But we'll be looking at that in the weeks ahead because it is graduation time in the month of May. In the meantime, as always, we're out of time. On behalf of John Leffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.